This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. The Seattle City Council earlier this week passed a historic measure to tax incomes of wealthy residents of their city. The measure to apply a 2.25% tax passed unanimously. It affects individuals making more than $250,000 a year and couples making more than $500,000 a year. How did such a measure, modest as it is, get passed in these times when politicians fear raising taxes on anyone, but especially on wealthy people? Can other city councils follow suit? To find out, we'll turn to one Seattle City Council member who is credited with being the main force behind the tax increase. Shama Sawant is a member of the Seattle City Council, and she's affiliated with the Socialist Alternative Party, and she became the first Socialist City Council member to be elected to that body. Welcome to the program, Shama.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
So first, I've heard of course, the federal government taxing incomes. That's what it does. The state governments tax incomes. But cities, do cities tax incomes?
Well, you know, it depends on whether the state in which the cities are located tax incomes or not. So what's remarkable, actually, about the law that we were able to pass this week is that Washington State, where Seattle is located, does not tax high incomes, and in other words, does not tax the rich. And in fact, the law at best is ambiguous about it. We anticipate, our movement anticipates, that Republicans, the right wing, and the billionaire class, wealthy people, are likely to launch a lawsuit in the state Supreme Court. But we want to have that fight. I mean, if you look at throughout history, if you look at how civil rights were passed, how abortion rights were obtained, and more recently, how marriage equality was achieved. It was not the Supreme Court leading the way. It was activists on the ground, working people, young people, building grassroots movements, pushing aside the status quo of corporate politics, winning victory after victory, and forcing Supreme Courts to change the law, to overturn unjust laws. That's the strategy that our movement is using, and that is why it's really important that we have been able to pass this historic law in Seattle.
So then I understand that this measure that was passed was in a way meant to address what many have called the most regressive state tax system in the nation that the state of Washington has. But there was already a citywide tax of 2%. You voted to increase it to 2.25%. Is that accurate?
Well, it's only accurate in the sense that during the deliberations, we went from 2% to 2.5%.
But so there was no tax citywide.
No, there was. In fact, as you said correctly, Sonali, Washington State currently has the most regressive tax system in the entire nation. What that means concretely is that if you are a household making $20,000 to $25,000 a year, you know, some of the poorest families who are working hard every day but don't have much to show for it, you are being taxed just ferociously. It's a punishing tax rate. Whereas if you're a wealthy household, you pay roughly 2%. And even more so, if you're a corporation like Boeing or Microsoft, you actually end up paying negative tax rates, meaning if you count up the subsidies that you that these corporations get from these regressive tax rates, ultimately they're getting more from the system than they're paying into it.
Now, 2.25% is still not very much, but how much would it boost city tax revenues by? What are some of the kinds of things that Seattle city residents can actually, you know, be happy about getting funded now that this tax is in place, assuming it doesn't, assuming it survives a legal challenge?
Right. So at 2.25%, we can raise $140 million, and that kind of money can go a long way to address homelessness, which is absolutely an escalating problem in this wealthy city. I mean, the problem with Seattle, like many other metropolitan regions like San Francisco, New York City, and so on, the problem is not that there isn't growth or wealth. I mean, we have here a GDP that is in excess of the national GDP growth rate. The problem is the deepening inequality. The city is becoming unaffordable and unlivable for the vast majority of working people and the poor, especially people of color, immigrant communities, and the LGBTQ community. So this money can go a long way in addressing homelessness. It could be used to build publicly owned affordable housing units. It could be used to address the chronic underfunding of public education. And I should mention that The chronic underfunding of public education lies at the doorstep of both the corporate Democratic and Republican parties in the state legislature in Olympia, because they have failed. They have failed in their duty to fund education, at the same time giving sweetheart deals to corporations like Boeing. And you know, the mathematics of this is so interesting, because even at this small tax rate, because all the wealth is in the hands of that tiny sliver at the top, you can raise a lot of money compared to having high tax rates on very, very low income people, where you can't raise that money and you're taxing the same people that actually need the benefits from the tax revenues. That is why this is very important.
So let's talk about how it happened. Now, Shama Sawant, you joined the city council. You were elected to the city council with some very clear campaign promises, among them raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour and taxing the rich, as well as working on rent control issues. How did you achieve two out of these three goals that you put forward? I'm assuming you probably had some grassroots help and that it was a uphill battle. I can't imagine that the city council, right from the start, your fellow city council members said, great, we love the idea of taxing the rich. We're all on board and we'll vote unanimously. How did you convince them?
That's absolutely right, Sonali. It does take a real movement to win such victories, and not just a movement, but a movement that is very clear that we cannot rely on corporate politicians and we have to build our own independent strength and force the hand of corporate politicians by showing them that if they don't vote yes on such a measure, that it will come at a steep political cost for their own careers. So the way we won $15 an hour was not by relying on these politicians, but by building a 15 now grassroots campaign that was able to mobilize and organize tens of thousands of workers around the city to a point, you know, to a crescendo where it was impossible for the establishment, for the Chamber of Commerce, for big business, for the restaurant industry, for the hotel industry to push back against our movement. It's a similar kind of momentum that we needed to build to tax the rich. I would say, you know, going beyond that, however, it is really critical for our movements to go to the next step, which is not just building grassroots momentum and then having to force corporate politicians to vote the right way. We also need our own voices in the corridors of power, in the corridors of government. And my being on the city council as a socialist, as an unambiguous representative of workers and young people, having never taken a penny from corporations and big business, and being undilutedly loyal to working people of Seattle, that is a critical component of winning these victories. It is not incidental, because when we have our own voices, we can use those elected positions, as I'm using, to further the interests of our movement, to fight for working people, and to help use this position not as somebody who just votes the right way, but actually, you know, in an active way, helps to build movements so that the movements ultimately can defeat corporate interests. Just to give you another example, and sort of two counter examples, you know, recently in Baltimore, there was a move by the city council to push for $15 an hour, but the Democratic mayor of Baltimore vetoed it. And at the same time, you know, some months later in last week, the 15 Now grassroots campaign that we started in Seattle has gone nationwide, and 15 Now Minnesota just won a historic victory in Minneapolis by passing $15 an hour. And that is the first Midwestern state now to have passed 15. But the way 15 now won, they don't have a representative on the city council yet. But the way they won is by building a movement that's independent of these council members. And these council members in Minneapolis, most of them Democrats, they even until weeks before the vote, they were waffling. And the reason they were forced to vote yes was because of the power of the movement from below. And that is why it is absolutely correct that now Socialist Alternative is running its own candidate, Ginger Jensen, for Minneapolis City Council. She was one of the key leaders of 15 Now that helped win 15 there.
Right. So it sounds like it's not enough to just have empowered grassroots activists on the outside pushing the city council to do more. It's not enough to have a lone member on the city council pushing their fellow council members to do better. You need both. So I imagine that you pushing this on the city council members, people in the audience with their tax the rich signs, really pressured the rest of the council to do the right thing, because there's not that many arguments when you are confronted with it to say, no, wealthy people should keep all their money. It's hard to come out and say that. It is. It sounds like that pressure really was strong enough in Seattle.
Yeah, I think that's very true. It's actually you raised a really important point, which is that if you look at ordinary working people and where their consciousness is, and Seattle is not unique in this. Of course, there are variations from city to city, but one common thread that runs throughout America right now, especially, is that tens of millions of people, the average American, majority of America, is sick and tired of inequality, of racial injustice, of gender injustice, of having to go to work every day and losing ground at the same time that Wall Street and the billionaire class continue to eat up the profits since the economic crisis broke out in 2008. And the fact that Bernie Sanders had such a huge momentum last year and that he still remains the most popular politician in America, despite everything that's happened with the election of Trump, it shows you that working people want to build fighting movements. What's been lacking, and what's lacking in a lot of places, is the leadership to build those organized struggles. We can win if we build those organized struggles, but one of the fundamental lessons we need to learn as social movements is that we're not going to be able to win, much less win victories, if we rely on corporate politicians and say, you know, let's talk to them nicely, let's build just a pressure group. It's not enough to build a pressure group. You got to go beyond that. You got to say that we are going to do this, and we're going to, you know, change the balance of power from corporations to workers. It's not easy to do that, but you have to do it. Look at the debacle of single-payer healthcare that just happened in California, the state where you're located. You know, there was a grassroots movement. There were left-wing Democrats who supported it, but who killed the movement? It was corporate Democrats.
So and ultimately, a single corporate Democrat named Anthony Rendon. Go ahead.
Exactly. And that's why we have to see, you know, it is building movements to win victories is not separate from the question of politics. And so it's not a either or, you know, should we build movements on the streets or should we focus on electoral politics? That's a wrong approach. It's a false dichotomy. We got to look at it, look at the full picture of politics.
Chama, are there, I mean, I sort of fantasize about every city council in every city in the country having a council member like you. I'm assuming that's part of what Socialist Alternative, your party, and possibly other independent parties are working on, especially in this age of Trump, where you see a renewed attention to local politics from the left. Do you see this burgeoning, do you see a burgeoning movement of folks running for their city councils and trying to push for some very basic things to address economic injustice like you're doing? And even in Seattle, are you the only one, or are you inspiring other socialists to join the city council?
I think that's a very, very important question, Sonali, especially as we head into the midterm elections next year. It's really critical. I hope all your viewers are thinking about this question. You know, what standards are we going to use next year to decide if we're going to really make any headway against Trump and his right-wing billionaire-dominated agenda? How are we going to make a real shift against Trump and defeating his agenda unless we hold our own movement and elected representatives to a higher standard? And I think people are already thinking seriously about it. I mean, already this year, DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America, which has really mushroomed its growth throughout the nation to 24,000 members at this point, they've already, you know, I think DSA candidates running as Democrats, of course, have won some victories in local positions in Illinois, in Georgia. So I think the next question that our movement, especially for members of the DSA, to be asking is, how do we fight using, now that we've won some of these positions, what are we going to use them for? How are we going to push against the corporate agenda? And yes, they ran as Democrats, and I've been very honest all along as a socialist alternative person. I don't believe that the running with the Democratic Party and putting our faith in the Democratic Party is going to help, because the establishment of that party is thoroughly corporate. But even so, now that we've won these left-wing victories, let's push the envelope. Let's see what we can win through Lumumba's victory as mayor in Jackson, Mississippi. And it's the duty of the movement to hold these candidates who have been elected through movement pressure, to hold them accountable? What are they going to be fighting for? Are they going to be fighting against the democratic establishment in their areas? And what will it take to defeat the establishment? I mean, the single payer example is a really important example to see that it is not going to be that easy or straightforward to defeat corporate interests. It's going to take a lot more. And I think that while movements are grappling with this question of whether the Democratic Party can be moved to the left or not, I think, you know, it's our job to think about it seriously. And we may have disagreements about that aspect of strategy, but we need to work together and see that whether you're running as a socialist or as a Democrat, if you have a different vision for society, then we have a common agenda in pushing back against and defeating corporate politics.
Well, Kshama Sawant, I want to thank you as always for joining us. We love to keep an eye on your work in Seattle as it's an inspiration to people around the country. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me, Sonali. It was a pleasure.
My guest is Kshama Sawant, Seattle City Council member, the first socialist council member to be elected to that body. She's affiliated with the Socialist Alternative Party. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.